Moed, today's daf in Yevamos Daf Ches. We are on Zayin Amud Beis. We thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf will be learned Lezeichen Nishmas Losim Ben Zaltzman. And a week into the daf now, we've been tackling one question. That's not normally how it goes in the daf. Normally, in the course of seven blot of Gemara, usually there's a little more variety in terms of what's being discussed. But over here, the discussion is so big, the topic is so big, that right now we are in, I would say, day seven in the discussion, and that's the topic of Esed Ochelosa, say whether or not a positive commandment is going to override a negative prohibition. So this comes up in the beginning of Yevamos, simply because that's Yibam seems to be a model example of this principle. In the mitzvah of Yibam, you have a positive commandment, and that is the mitzvah of Yibam, where you're going to marry your brother's wife, your deceased brother's wife, in order lahakim shem echav, in order to perpetuate the name of the family and the legacy, and at the same time, it's your brother's wife, and that means that she's an erva, which means that she's a lav, and not just a lav, but a lav sheish bo karis. So what do you do? So we know what you do. The Torah says that the mitzvah is that the brother marries her, despite the fact that she's an erva. On the other hand, the Mishnah then went through 15 other arayos, which if we were to add on to the fact that she's your brother's wife, in addition to being your brother's wife, let's say, for example, she's also your daughter, just as a simple example, as the first example in the Mishnah. So then the Mishnah says, no, then you don't have the mitzvah of Yibam, because then the erva is going to trump the mitzvah. So the question is, and the question has been since Gimel Amud Beis, since we were introduced to the Braisa, why should that be? Why should the mitzvah essay not override the lo sase sheish bo karis? And so the answer, all the way back on Daf Gimel Amud Beis, is because the Torah says so. We have a special pasuk. We have a special drasha of Aleha, which then prompted the Gemara to suggest that, okay, without the special drasha, the default would have been that a mitzvah sase is going to trump. It's going to trump a lav. It's going to trump a lav sheish bo karis. The mitzvah sase is going to trump. And then if that's generally the rule, where else do we find this? And that's been a lot of our search for the last couple of days in the Daf. Meaning what... where else? Can you give me some sort of precedent where we find that a mitzvah sase is going to override a lav sheish bo karis? And that I need the pasuk of Allah to tell me that in the mitzvah of Yibam it's not going to happen. But that's an exception to the rule, and the rule is that the mitzvah sase is going to trump that usually the mitzvah sase is going to trump a lo sase, even a lav sheish bo karis. Good. And that's what we've been covering now for the past, you know, that particular question of lav sheish bo karis has been the last 2 days of Daf. And now we're going to go into a third day of Daf. So you remember yesterday the Gemara said, maybe we can leave the world of Esei Dochelo Sase. You remember yesterday we had a Braisa that described the Mitzvah Sase versus Alo Sase in regards to Beis Din executing on Shabbos. That's another example of a positive commandment up against a negative prohibition, and Alav Sheish Bukaris. We're talking about Chilul Shabbos. And so there we had a Braisa. How do you understand the Braisa? So the Gemara gave us two avenues to understand the Braisa. Either the Braisa was operating through the mechanism Esed Ochelo Sase, or the Gemara says it's a totally different way to understand the Braisa, and the Braisa was operating through Kal Vachomer. And that's another way to understand the Braisa, and then we sidestepped the whole Esed Ochelo Sase. Then in yesterday's Daf, now I'm up to Daf Zayin in terms of just a broad overview. So the Gemara Daf Zayin points out that maybe in the world of Yibam, maybe it's operating with some of the Midah Sheba Torah that we don't normally see, right? We noted yesterday Midah number 8 and Midah number 11, right? Davash Ayah Bechol V'yatzam Naklal, or Davash Ayah Bechol V'yatzal Adom B'davar HaChadash. The Gemara pointed out yesterday that Yibam really fits into the second and not the first, meaning Davash Ayah Bechol V'yatzal Adom B'davar HaChadash. Why is it Davar HaChadash? Because normally an erva is aser. And meanwhile, the Torah says, "Hey, shesach, you marry her." So it's a chiddush. It's a chiddush akra that you marry a yibam. And what's the rule? What's the 11th rule that you'd give a midah shatar nejashas b'hem? I atara shayla hachziru lechlalo achiach zvan lecha kasa b'feirush. That once the Torah gives you a chiddush, ein bo ela chidusho. All you have is a chiddush. You don't have anything more than that. So therefore, I cannot extend this idea of marrying a relative other than what the Torah says, which is a shesach. And that's why I would need the aleha. That's another possibility that the Gemara proposed yesterday, or I should say rather, I'm sorry. Then I wouldn't need aleha because ein bo ela chidusho, and I wouldn't have thought otherwise. Then the Gemara pointed out maybe it's operating through a binyanav. This is Zayin Amud Beis already. Maybe all this is operating through a binyanav, and a binyanav tells us precedent. If the Torah sets a precedent, so then you follow the precedent. If the Torah says that for the mitzvah of Yibun, you marry an Erva, okay, so maybe through a Binyanav, you're always going to marry an Erva. And to which the Gemara pretty quickly rejected that idea, because in the case of Eshes Ach, she is one Erva to you. In any of the other cases in the Mishnah, where your brother married not only a woman, but a woman who was already related to you, for example, she's your daughter, so that's two Arayas. So just because there's a Binyanav by Eshes Ach doesn't mean that there's going to be a Binyanav by any of the other Arayas mentioned, because it's Shtei Arayas and not just one Erva. Okay, so the Binyanav also didn't work as well. So, back to square one, why do I need Aleha? Why do I need a special drasha all the way back on Daf Gimel Amud Beis that tells me that if the opportunity arises where I have a mitzvah yibum and I have a lav of erva, why does the Torah need to go out of its way to tell me that that you don't marry her in such a scenario, other than Eshes Ach? That's the question, and we are going to continue now trying to respond to the question. So the Gemara says, we're on Zayin Amud Beis, we're right in the middle of the Amud, it's a short Amud. The Gemara says, Hacha Tracer. Mao de Tema, we'll start right there. Halfway down. A little bit less. Mao de Tema Hovi Shari Shtari. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we can use the following principle, and that is Hovi Shtari Shtari, which basically means once the Torah permits something, the permission continues. Ominatema Darmina Hovi Shari Shtari. So here's what we're going to do now. What we're going to do is we're going to find a model example in the Torah where we see this principle come to life of Hol Vishtari Vishtari, and then what we're going to do is we're going to then try to apply it to the mitzvah of Yibum. Again, what we want to see is that, that the Torah permits Eshes Ach, as long as the Torah permits Eshes Ach, the Torah would in theory also permit other Yisurim as well. That's the thought process behind this concept of Hol Vishtari Vishtari, and then once I have this principle, now I understand why I need the word Aleha. I need a special Xeris accustomed to tell me that we're not going to say Hol Vishtari Vishtari. That's the end game. That's what we want to get to in this course of the Gemara. This discussion will take us into today's daf into Ches Amud Aleph. Okay, so let's see. So first thing we're going to do is we're going to see this come to play, this principle of Hol Vishtari Vishtari. So the Tanya Gemara quotes a Braisa, Mitzorah Shechal Shemini Shel Erev Pesach. You have a Mitzorah whose eighth day turns out to be an Erev Pesach. Okay, the stars are going to align in this scenario. A lot of things are going to come together. Okay, so first things first, you have a mitzvah on day 8. We know that a mitzvah, in order to go through his tahara process, needs to go through a 7-day purification process. On the 7th day, he'll tovel in the mikvah, and that night he'll be tahor, for the most part. He's still mechus kippurim. He still needs to bring a karban on day 8. Those karbanos that he brings on day 8 allows him entrance into the Beis HaMikdash, allows him to eat karban. Until he brings that karban, he's not allowed to. Until he brings his karbanos, he's not allowed to do so. He's not allowed to enter into the Beis HaMikdash. Now, when I say the Beis HaMikdash, I mean, more accurately, the Azara. He can't, as a mitzvah, go into the Azara. What does he do? Bring his karbanos, but he's not allowed to go into the Azara. And on top of that, also, he's going to have, we spent a couple of days already discussing this, he's going to have the blood of the Karban Asham being placed on his right thumb, on his right toe, on his right earlobe. So how is he going to do that? The blood can't leave the Beis HaMikdash, he can't enter into the Beis HaMikdash. So what do we do? Like any good compromise, we meet halfway. So what the Mitzvah is going to do on his eighth day with his Karbanos is he's going to go into the Harbais, he's going to go up to the Shani Kanur, that's the eastern gate of the Beis HaMikdash. He's going to take his hand and he's going to put it into the Azara. He's going to be in the threshold of the Shani Kanur. I will show you Rashi in just a moment, where Rashi says that the entrance of the Shani Kanur is not have Kedushas Azara. It only has Kedushas Harabais. He is allowed entrance into the Harabais as a Mitzvah. And what he'll do is he'll take his thumb and he'll put it into the Azara. And the blood will be applied to his thumb. Or what he'll do is he'll take his toe and he'll put his toe into the Azara. Not or. And. And he'll take his toe and he'll put his toe into the Azara and he'll have the blood of the Asham applied to his toe. Okay, that's all the Mitzvah on day 8. So what's the scenario over here? Mitzvah Shechal Shemini Shel Erev HaPesach. So lo and behold, so it works out perfectly for this guy. He's a Mitzvah. His day 8 comes out in Erev Pesach. Perfect. So he'll be, as long as he does his Karbanos that day, he'll be ready to eat Karban Pesach that night. That'll be fine. But now, let's make it more complicated. V'ra keri bo bayom. And on that day, which is his eighth day of Tzaras, which is Erev Pesach, he also turns out to be a Balkari, he has a discharge. So Boba Yom. So Vitavo. And he tovels in the mitzvah. Now here, what this Keri does, it introduces a new Tumah to him. totally separate from its saras. And what the keri does is, or what it generally does is that he tovels in the mikveh after being a bal keri, and we're talking about only one re'iyah, only having seen one discharge, and he'll tovel in the mikveh, and that night he'll be totally tovel. Okay, fine. And right, from the time that he tovels in the mikveh until that night, correct, he'll be a tovel yom. Now, but here's the problem. As a bal keri, he's not allowed to go neither into the azara, nor is he allowed to go into Har HaBayis. A bal keri cannot go into Har HaBayis. Right? Those people nowadays, and I know it's controversial, I'm not getting into the controversy, but nowadays there are some people who go onto Har HaBayis. So the men who go onto Har HaBayis nowadays, in order for them to do so, they have to tovel in the mikvah. Why? Because they're bal keri. Assuming they're married. So they're not allowed to into Har HaBayis. So now this person's a bal keri, and so he can't go into Har HaBayis. So what happens now with such an individual? So again, let's get this straight. He is a Metzora on the eighth day. He was planning on going into Har HaBayis, which he was allowed to do, up to the Azara, through the Nikaner gate, but not past the Nikaner gate, and put his arms through in order to get an application of the blood of the Dam Hashem. At the same time, however, he's also now a Bal Keri, and that Kri happens on day eight. Amru Chachamim. Here's the key. Generally speaking, it's not even a question. There's no shayla. Well, if you have a bal keri who wants to go into the Har HaBayis, you can't go into the Har HaBayis. You are a bal keri. This one's allowed to go into the Har HaBayis. Why? Mutav shiyavo ese sheish bo kares v'yitche ese sheim bo kares. Because let's think about what's that risk over here? What's at stake? He wants to finish up with all of his tumah, his mitzorah, and his keri, so that tonight he can eat karban pesach. In karban pesach, failure to eat karban pesach results in an iser kares. We all know, of course, that there's a second opportunity. There's a second chance. There's pesach sheni. But right now, let's look at the lay of the land as it presents itself right now. Right now, if we just allow him to go into the Har HaBayis and get the blood application of the Asham, and of course he'll tovel in the mikvah, tonight he'll be ready to eat Karban Pesach. So that value, what the Gemara refers to as an essay, Sheish Bo Kares, is a greater value than not allowing him entree into the Har HaBayis area, even though he's a Keri, even though normally he's not allowed to. But that is, but considering the stakes, we're going to ignore that so that he can go into Har HaBayis and get the blood application. So far, so good, and we haven't even made the point yet.
Does he have to bring a korban all of you, right, if he goes in with two
If you're right, the first parak in Shavuos. So you have to bring a carbon all of the yard. But that's generally true. But again, right now we're just.
So it's a separate thing.
Keep that separate. That's its own separate tab. And again, maybe in this particular case, it's totally motor for reasons which we're about to articulate. Now, V'amar Rav Yochanan. Now, the Gemara is going to make a parenthetical note, which is not, I don't think, germane to our discussion right now, but, you know, when the Gemara brings this up, the Gemara brings in the Rav Yochanan comment afterwards, so we're going to read it, of course, because it's part of the Gemara, but it's not, it seems to be tangential. V'amar Rav Yochanan Dvar Torah Afilu Esei Leisbei. Rav Yochanan says, allowing the Bal Keri into the Har HaBayis is not an Isser of the Torah, it is an Isser de Rabbanan. So if you were to ask Rav Yochanan, is this a big deal? Rav Yochanan says, not as big a deal. We're not hiding our eyes to an Isser de Raisa, an Isser de Rabbanan. So Shenema V'yamod Yoshafa B'kal Yehudolf Ne'chatzer Chadasha, in front of the new courtyard, what is that a reference to? My Chatzer Chadasha. So Amar Rav Yochanan Shechishu Badvarim. There's a chiddush, Ramu Tful Yom Leikanes Lamachna Leviyah, that a Tful Yom cannot enter into Machna Leviyah. Okay, so but according to Rav Yochanan, it's an Issa Darabban, it's not an Issa Daraisa. Okay, again, seemingly a tangential point. But now we're going to hit the main point of this discussion, and that is Ula, V'amar Ula, Mata'am. Why? Again, leave Rav Yochanan on the back burner and just look at the facts on the ground. He's a Mitzorah, which means that he would be allowed into Har HaBayis and he would be going into the Nikaner gate. But now he's a Bal Keri. And we're saying, and he became a Bal Keri on day eight. And what we're saying to the individual is, it's okay. Why is it okay? for this Balkari to go into the Harabais when we wouldn't allow no other Balkari to go into the Harabais. And here we go. Matam ho v'hutur l'tzaraso, hutur l'kiriyav. Once he was extended a heter to go in because of its saras, so therefore another heter was extended in for him to enter into the Harabais, despite the fact that he's a Balkari. Let's take a look at Rashi together. Most of the Rashis up until this point in time I summarized. Sorry. All the Rashis up until this point in time I summarized. I haven't read a single Rashi yet. But let's take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi over here on Ula's comment. V'amar Ula, it's the last Rashi on this Amud. He, Rashi writes, B'mesechet Tzvachim, D'amar Ula, Bia B'mikzash Mabia. So Rashi gives us the background information so that we really appreciate what Ula is saying. Ula is of the opinion that Bia B'mikzash may Bia. That even just the insertion of your thumbs into the Azara, that's considered entering into the base, entering into the Azara. Okay, that's a debate. This is subject to a debate whether or not a partial entrance is considered an entrance. Ula is of the opinion that a partial entrance is considered an entrance. That's Ula's opinion. And the Gemara is bothered. Ula, really? That a partial entrance is considered an entrance? I understand. Do you see what's going on over here? We're allowing a Balkari to not only go into the Harabais area, but take his thumbs, the thumbs owned by a Balkari, and put it into the Azara. A, he's not allowed into Harabais. B, he's for sure not allowed into the Azara. And you hold that Bia B'mekzes, it's Shema Bia, that's considered an entrance. Like, what's going on? So So you want to tell me that he can go into Harabais? I can tolerate that, because as the Gemara itself just pointed out, that's an essay shein bokaris. That is a lighter mitzvah essay. By the way, Rashi keeps calling it a mitzvah essay. Why? In other words, isn't it a lav? No, because the pasuk says vayishalchu, you send them out. So that's why it's put under the category of a mitzvah essay. So granted that going into Harabais is a lighter mitzvah essay than that of Karban Pesach. So to that, I can tolerate that. However, lebahonos heichimatsim me'ayol yadei. But how can he take his thumbs and put it into the Azara if you, Ula, are of the opinion that be'en b'mikzah shema bia? And he's a Balkarian. How can he do that? The idea is sheish Balkari to the kaima lamba benachos ba'komitz rabba. And now that's an iser kares. For a Balkari to go into the Azara is an iser kares. So now you've lost your argument of, well, it's a lighter essay. It's not a lighter essay for someone who's coming to go into the Azara. So how can he stick his thumbs into the Azara? So mechus kippur shenechnas lamikdash enosh kares. And Mechusar Kippurim, who goes into the Azara, is subject to a courage punishment. And it goes without saying that if you're a Tvul Yom or anyone else's Tameh, you're not allowed into the Azara. Meaning Mechusar Kippurim, of all those who are Tameh, are the lightest of Tama. Meaning they have the least amount of residual Tama, and they're not allowed to go into the Azara. So the Tvul Yom and anyone greater than that for sure is not allowed to go into the Azara.
They don't have to even stick their thumbs out like Mitzora. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Right. So, good. So that's the question. So how can...
They have been Balkari, though. I mean, they can't even do the...
Correct. Correct. So, good. So, good. So the question's been set up. Vishani Ula, and now Rashi quotes the Gemara in Zvachim, and Ula's response to all this is... Shani mitzvah, hol the huchul abia b'mikzas atzaraso. Shari adai mechus kippurim hu uvekaris v'huchul amin haTorah. So Ula says none of this bothers me. Why? Because he's a mitzora on day 8, and I'm of the opinion that bia b'mikzas shma bia. Okay, but at the same time, when you're a mitzora, you're following the instructions of the Torah. The Torah tells you that you, the mitzora, are allowed to take your hands and put it into the azara. The Torah gives you allowance to do so. Meaning, under normal circumstances, if it's not day 8 of the Mitzara, it's a no with an Isser Kares attached to it. But here, totally okay, because the Torah says so. So in other words, the Torah affords you a heter. So now Ula says, once the Torah gives you a heter, kaven de hutra, hutra. Here we go. Here's the punchline. So v'hutra l'min haTorah, b'yazu b'mikzas hutan amel kiriyav. So therefore, a heter is extended also for his balkari. So alma hol v'ishtari chadisura, ishtari nami idach dahavegabe. So since he's afforded one heter, and that is a mitzora day eight, he's allowed to take his sums and put into the azara. So therefore, he's also balkari as well. The Torah gives him a license. He has a heter. He therefore has a heter to violate other related isurim. Good. Adkan, that is now the case of the mitzora day eight who becomes a balkari. And now what the Gemara would like to do is extend it to our scenario. And our scenario is yibum. So look, the Torah allows a Yavam, the brother-in-law, to marry his sister-in-law, despite the fact that she's a Shesach. She's an Erva. The Torah allows it. And now we can make the argument. Let's say, in addition to also being a Shesach, let's say she's also your wife's sister. I use that example because I know I kept using the daughter. But here I'm going to use the wife's sister as an example, as you'll see just a moment, because that's essentially what the Gemara will do. Let's say, in addition to being your brother's wife, she's also your wife's sister. Otherwise stated, two brothers marry two sisters. Right. Fine. And we have a family like that here in Boca. So it's fine. Right. For Yibum, it'll be a complication, but we pray that that never will happen. And anyway, they have children. So, all right. So the Gemara says, so let's now make the argument that as long as the Torah is Matir Eshesach, the Torah is also going to be Matir Achos Ishto. Kevan de Hutra Hutra. This is now the argument that we could have made. And as long as we can make this argument, now I've answered my question going all the way back to Daf Gimel Amud Beis. The Gemara's question is, why do I need a special drasha by Yibam? Why does the Torah have to go out of its way to tell me that a Yavam cannot marry any other Erva other than his brother's wife? Answer? Because of this principle of Kevan de Hutra Hutra. Good. The Gemara says, and that was the easy part of today's daf. To which the Gemara says, "Mi dami l'de'ula." The Gemara says it's not comparable. I cannot compare the Mitzora case to our case of Yibam for the following reason. Teina chechad nasa meis v'achar kach nasa chai. We're on the very top of Chesamad Aleph, and the Gemara says, "Look, you know when it's comparable? That would be in a scenario where." First the dead guy marries and then the live guy marries. What does that mean, a dead guy being married? Right? It's very difficult for somebody dead to marry. Beyond. When the Gemara here refers to the dead guy, it means the guy who will inevitably die. Meaning in Yibum, like I said in the beginning of the Masechta, we're talking death daily. That's the Masechta of Yibum. So we're right, and let's give the names because let's go with Reuven Shimon, and let's assume like we've done throughout, Shimon's gonna die. Okay, so Shimon's the dead brother. Meaning he's the one that inevitably will die. So the Gemara says, look, if Shimon marries his sister first, and then Reuben follows and marries the second sister second, so the Gemara says, then it's a better match to the case of the Mitzora. Why? The Migu Dishtari Isra Eshesach, Ishtari Nami Isra Achos Isha. Because look, what we're looking for is, like I said yesterday, this concept of Kevin de Hutra Hutra is like the domino effect of Isurim, where the Torah allows you the first domino, and then it's going to hit the second domino and create the domino effect. Although in this game of dominoes, we're only using two dominoes. But you understand, right? So it's a good match if the first Isur that came on board was the one that the Torah was Matir. Otherwise stated as Eshesach. So if Shimon marries first, so now, that wife of Shimon to Reuven is what? Eshesach, which is inevitably what the Torah is going to permit. So if the Torah is going to permit Eshesach, so then fine. Then you can make an argument of, well, when Reuven marries the other sister, well, that Isser is going to be lifted as well, because the Eshesach is lifted, and so therefore the Achos Ishta is going to be lifted as well. And then it would be a match to the case of the Mitzora. But the Gemara says, but let's reverse it. Let's say Reuven marries his sister first, and then his wife. Right, thank you. Right. Yeah, I know what I meant, but you said it better. Right. Right, sister number one. So let's say Reuven marries his wife first. And then Isra Achos Isha Kadem. So that means then that the other potential wife, future wife, is going to be his wife's sister. In other words, the Isra of Achos Ishto. I'm sorry. So The Gemara says that's not good, because again, this concept of kevan dehutra hutra is only when the first iser gets matered, then the second iser will fall as well. But in this case, Eishes Ach came in second. Achos Ishta came in first, if Reuven married his wife first. So then you don't have the domino effect. You don't have the kevan dehutra hutra. And the Gemara says, and I'll tell you what, even if they married in the correct order, it still won't be a match to the case of the Mitzorah. The Afilu, next line of the Gemara, the Afilu Nasa Meis Nami, even if Shimon marries first. So that means that his wife to Reuven is Eshesach. And then Reuven marries the other sister. And now, secondly, she's now Achos Ishto. Okay. Even in such a scenario, it's still not a perfect match to the case of the Mitzorah. And why not? Because in order for it to be a perfect match, you know what would need to happen? The following. Shimon first has to marry his wife. Fine. Then Shimon has to die. Then Reuven marries the other sister. Then it would be a perfect match. Why? Because in the case of the Mitzorah, let's think about what happens. What happens is, again, this is all from the eyes, from the perspective of Ula. In the case of the Mitzorah, he wakes up, the Mitzorah wakes up on day 8. And when he wakes up on day 8, he's not yet a Balkari. What does the Torah allow him to do? It gives him license to go into the Harabais, into Shani Kanner, and stick his thumbs into the Azara. He has total license to do so. And it is unobstructed by any other Isra in the Torah. And then later that day, he becomes a Balkari. The Torah says, Ula's argument is, Kevin de Hutra Hutra. He's given one heter, therefore he's allowed that second heter as well. Fine. But here in the case of Yibum, now hold on one second. Even if Shimon marries first, so good. So the woman now to Reuven is Eshesach, which the Torah eventually will matir if Shimon dies. But at the same time, he now married his wife while Shimon was still alive. So now, he was never given an unobstructed heter, meaning when Shimon dies, that woman, the widow, to him, is Eshesach and Achos Ishta at the same time. And that's not what we're looking for. In order for it to be a perfect match to the case of the Balkari, we need the heter to exist in of itself, unobstructed by any other Isser. So what would need to happen would be, Shimon would first have to marry his wife, Shimon would die, Reuven would then marry the other, which, I'm right. And then the wife would be mutter to Reuven through the principle of Yibum. Reuven would marry the other sister, and then we would could use the argument of Kevin de Hutra Hutra. Because at one point, Shimon's wife to Reuven was totally mutter, unobstructed by any other Isser. Then and only then it would work. And just in case you're holding on to this point in the Gemara, I'll make a slight parenthetical comment, which is brought up by the Rishonim, which is, if you understood everything up until now, great. And that is that on a rabbinic level, Reuven is not allowed to marry the sister of Zekuka. Okay, we're not supposed to know that yet. Meaning that yes. The Gemara didn't mention that yet, and I'm mentioning it only right now as a parenthetical note, and it's brought up by the Rishonim, and you can see it in Tosfos Rishonim where he brings it up. And okay, but again, right now we're dealing with concepts and principles. So let's just leave it with the concepts and principles, and then there are technical issues as well.
Is that rabbinic or?
That's rabbinic. That's rabbinic. Well, again, we haven't even brought it up yet, so let's keep it as a parenthetical note, and then later in the Masechta we'll come and we'll discuss it in more detail. Okay. Ella Nasa Meis, back to the Gemara. Velo Meis V'Acharkach Nasa Chai Lo Ichzele Klal. So the Gemara says, but if we had a scenario where Shimon marries his wife first, and then Reuven marries his wife second, and the two wives are sisters, and even though we have it in the correct order, first Eishes Ach, then Achos Ishto, but still, if and when Shimon dies, Reuven is going to not be permitted using the principle of Kevin Dehotra Hotra, because the principle of Kevin Dehotra Hotra is only when the first heter exists free and clear of any other iser. Look, I'll tell you this. Let's say the mitzvah didn't become a balkari on day 8. Let's say it became a balkari the night prior, the eve of day 8. Even Ula is going to agree. I can't use the principle of kevin de ocho. Because again, when he wakes up in the morning, he wasn't given a license to go into the Azara and to go up to the Shani Connor and place his thumbs into the Azara. It wasn't free and clear. Ula's allowance, Ula's principle of Kevin Dehotra Hotra is limited to only a scenario where the first heter existed on in of itself. Free and clear, unobstructed by any other ister. So the Gemara says, you know what? Point taken, point conceded. So the Gemara says, and talk about an anticlimactic way to end a week of daf, the Gemara says, you know why I need the drasha of Alaha? In the scenario in which Shimon marries his wife first, Shimon dies, Reuven marries his wife second, again the two wives are sisters, in that scenario, I could have used the principle of Kevin de Otra Otra, and that's why I need a drasha v'alaha. So in this limited circumstance, I would need the drasha v'alaha, because without the drasha v'alaha, I would have allowed Reuven to marry his brother's wife, despite the fact that she is also his wife's sister. Okay. Good. Go back on the recording. Go back on the recording. Play that last 30 seconds a couple of times. And they're like,
that's only if you follow Ula.
And that's only, right, correct, correct, agreed, agreed, agreed. This is all an approach given if you follow Ula's thought process. Correct. No, they're both Araisa to Araisa. The parenthetical note, I should not have even mentioned it. I have regrets. The parenthetical note is another issue to consider in addition to everything we've been discussing. And that is the wife of the sister of your Zakuka. But leave that out. It's a parenthetical note. I shouldn't have mentioned.
You're going through all this.
No. First of all, you're right. It's not a perfect example. Secondly, what we're trying to understand is drushas in the Torah. Why did the Torah need to say it? Meaning, what was the Torah responding to? The Torah is not responding to an Issa Darabanan. Torah is responding to a concept that applies on a Daraisa level. So the Rabbanan issue, which I rage parenthetically, is a Rabbanan issue. You're right. It doesn't make it a perfect example. Agreed. But at least we understand that on the Daraisa plane. Moving along. We are now continuing in the Gemara. Ibai Seima. Okay. That is all but one approach in terms of why the Torah has to go out of its way to say Allah. The Gemara is going to try to give another approach. Again, you have to accept. There's a lot of things to accept over here in order to accept this. You have to accept Ula. You have to accept. Totally unclear. I'm unclear about. Meaning, but if you accept Ula and you accept the Bia B'mitzvah Shmei Bia, there are a lot of things have to fall in line in order for this approach to be, you know, an accepted position.
It's not satisfying.
Correct. You notice that also. Okay. Ibai Yisema Asya Be'Kesha Mid Rav Yona. So the Gemara says the Hekesh of Rav Yona. We're going to see this a couple times in the Masechta. Rabbi Yonah's Hakish, and that is Rabbi Yonah v'Item Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yehoshua, and you know the Gemara wants to make sure that it's got its attribution down correctly. Amarkar kikol asher yaseh mikol ha-toevos ha'ela v'nichrasu. So the Torah, at the end of listing all the arayos, the Torah says, lumps them all together. Anyone who does any one of these arayos, so they're going to have a kares penalty. Okay, so and that summary statement at the end of the parsha of Arise tells us what? Hukshu kol Arise kulan le'eshasach. They're all hukash. They're all connected. Meaning that pasuk takes them all and bundles them all together. So ma eshasach shayav kol Arise namishayan. So using the hekesh, what could we argue? We can argue that it's all going to be mutter. Once the Torah bundles them together, they're all going to be mutter. And that's why the Torah has to say the word Allah. Now, isn't that amazing? In other words, seven days of daf discussing this issue of Yibum and so many issues. And here, the Gemara throws out a hekesh, and the Gemara says, oh, okay, that's it. And what about the fact that it's one erva, not two ervas? And what about all the other considerations that we had? So Rashi points out over here, we're talking now hekesh. When we're talking hekesh, ein meshivin al ha-hekesh. You'll see that at the end of Rashi of Ibai Zema. When you have a hekesh, you can ask all the questions you want. When the Torah lumps something together, when the Torah bundles, so at that point in time, no questions. I should try that now every now and then. Just no questions. So the okay, but Amish even al hekesh, you don't no questions on the hekesh. So Amalei Rav Achmi Difta, I love it. Immediately after saying that, Amalei Rav Achmi Difta Ravina Mechti Kol Raisi Kalakshin Leishasach Beikalakshin LaAchosisha. So the Gemara says, I have a question, even though I told you just no questions. But no, the question is strong. It's powerful, and that is, look, there are two arayos of all the arayos in the Torah. There are two of them which stand out in the world of Yibum. One is Achos Eshesach, your brother's wife, that's one erva, and another one is Achos Ishto, the sister of your wife. Okay, now we know, and when it comes to Yibum, Eshesach, permitted. We also know when it comes to Yibum, Achos Ishto, prohibited. And now it's true, the Torah at the end of the Arayos lumps all them together, bundles them all them together. But good. But which one is the centerpiece of the bundling? Is it the Eshesach, which is the centerpiece, which means that all the arayos would be mutter? Or is it Achos Ishto, which is the centerpiece of the bundling, which means that all the arayos would be aser? Oh, that's a good question. So, my chaz is the Achos Ishto, Akshin LeEshesach. Okay, that's a good question. So, Ibai Samalakula v'chomer l'chomer makshina. So the Gemara says, well, given the choice of whether the hekesh is going to go lakula, whether the hekesh is going to go lachumra, so we're going to go lachumra. Fine. So that's one reason why the conclusion was that all the arayos will be forbidden. Ibai sema hachatrei sur v'hachatrei suri v'trei mechay yafinan avahachachadi sur v'trei mechad lo yafinan. Another reason why Achos Isha would be the better hekesh, right, the one that's more complementary, is because all the other arayos are a better match to Achos Ishto. Like we said already once before. Now we're going to repeat. Eshes Ach is only one erva to the brother. Meaning, when Shimon dies, his wife, his widow, is now only but one erva to Reuven. And that's Eshes Ach. If, however, she is a compounded erva with any of the other arayos mentioned in the Mishnah, by definition that makes her two ervas. And Achos Ishto, two brothers marry two sisters, and Shimon dies, so now his widow, Teruvain, is not one, but two arayos. All the other ervas mentioned in the Torah, in the construct of Yibum, is going to be two arayos. Therefore, it's a better match to compare all the other arayos to Achos Ishto and not to Eshes Ach. Again, play that line again, replay that line again a couple of times. Rava Amar Erva Lo Tzricha Kra. Okay, and now we turn a corner in the Gemara. Right, we noted Hekesh is one of those drushas which is not part of the Yud Gimel Midah Shatar Nedrashas by him. Okay, I don't know. I don't know. It's a very good question, and I don't know the answer. Okay, and now let's turn a corner in the Gemara, because up until now, what we have been assuming is that in the world of Esei Dochalosa, say a positive commandment is going to override negative prohibition. And as we said in yesterday's daf, it does not matter the degree, the level of negative prohibition. It could be a lav sheyesh bo karis, it does not matter. And Esei is going to be stronger, it's going to override. And that's why, again, one of the approaches that we've said, there are a number of approaches, but that's one of the approaches we said in terms of why the Torah has to go out of its way and tell us that the mitzvah of Yibum is not going to trump any of the other arayos outside of Eshes Ach. Okay? And that has been our thought process through the last, let's say, 7 days of Gemara. Last week of Gemara. And now what we're going to do in the Gemara, as we are moving along, we're on Chesam and Aleph, and we're a little bit below the halfway point of the Gemara, and we're going to have a different thought process. Or not we, Rava is. Rava is going to disagree with a lot of the thinking that's taken place until now. So we can just simply say, even though the Gemara doesn't frame it this way, that really this is another side to the story of Esei Docheh Lo Sa'aseh. Now again, he's not arguing with the basic premise that a positive commandment overrides a regular standard negative prohibition. This is when we ratchet it up to a lav sheish bo kares, where Rava's basically going to say an essay will not trump that. Rava amar erva lo tzricha kra. Rava says no pasuk necessary. Dein essay doch lo sase sheish bo kares. Okay. A positive commandment is not going to trump a lav sheish bo kares. Ki etzer kra. So then the question becomes really simple. Rava, if you take that position, then the whole daf gimel amud beis is unnecessary, because I don't need drushas to tell me that if you're an erva, that if you have a chance of doing the mitzvah of yibum, and she's an erva other than a shesach, then she's automatically forbidden as a default. So then, why would I need a drusha?
How would you handle all those discussions we had about the beit din and the shabbat and
right. Right, good. You're gonna have. There's a lot of things that will need to be revisited forever. Understood. Okay, but we're gonna go on. But you're right. Yeah, that's the other 23 hours of today. So the Gemara says, "So sheki itzter akra lemeisat sara ve'erva." I'm sorry. So the sheish bokaris ki itzter akra lemeisat sara. So the Gemara says the reason why we have a drasha is for the co-wife, which we would not necessarily have thought would have been aser. So for that, we need a drasha. So the Gemara says, which later in just a couple of lines, the Gemara is going to challenge that, but let's just right now stay on task. So the Gemara says, now what do you mean? Erva doesn't need a pasuk? Didn't sound that way from the Braisa. The Gemara reviews the Braisa for us. The Braisa says, I know about her meaning. I've used the drasha to describe why she, the principal, is forbidden. So it sounds like we had a drasha for the erva. No, mishum tzara. So the Gemara says no. The Gemara quickly deflects. No, that drasha was for the tzara. V'haktani ein le'alain. What do you mean? Isn't there another drasha in the brisa that responds to the tzara? No, mishum tzara sayim. The Gemara says no. That's a reference to the tzara of the tzara. Okay. Tashma. So the Gemara says, well, how about consider the following? Ready, Omer v'lakach v'lakcha, v'yabeim v'yibma, v'lakach v'lakcha. That hey is diminutive; it's a limitation. It's a miut. Same thing with the hey at the end of v'yabeim v'yibma. Lasser tsaros v'arayas. And what does that do? That prohibits the tsaros and the arayas. Okay, sounds like that's a very short drasha, but much shorter than the Gimel Midbeis drasha. But still, arriving at the same conclusion: the erva is prohibited to the yibum. The tzara of the erva is prohibited to the yibum. What does it sound like? It sounds like we have a special drasha for the erva herself. According to Rava, don't you argue we don't need a drasha? Gemara says, "Eim alaser tzaros shel arayos." Answers the Gemara, no. What Rebbe meant in his braisa was the tzara of the erva. V'atrei kri kanasiv lei. Again, that braisa doesn't sound that way. The braisa quoted two drashas. One is v'lakcha and the other one is v'yibma. So my love chal erva v'chal letzara. No, ida v'ida letzara. So the Gemara says both of them are for the tzara. Chad lemesa tzara b'makom mitzvah, v'chad lemishrei tzara shalo b'makom mitzvah. I need two drushas for the tzara. One to tell me that a tzara is permitted, and one to tell me that a tzara is prohibited. If it's a tzara in a yibum context, she's prohibited. She's a shesach shalo b'makom mitzvah. Fine. If it's a tzara of a non-yibum scenario, i.e., a guy, now I'm not related to, married my daughter and another wife, and he dies, there's no prohibition to marry the tzara, the co-wife of the erva. That's shelo b'makom mitzvah. My time of yabmen v'yibam b'makom yibam u'dasirei tzara, shelo b'makom yibam b'shar tzara. And that's how the drasha works. Meaning, in a yibum context, the tzara of the co-wife of the erva is aser, but in a non-yibum context, she would be permissible. Amar Ravashi Masis Anami Deka. Ravashi says, I really like this approach. This approach of Rava, it's a good approach. Again, the approach is assuming I don't need a drasha for the erva herself. So the Gemara says, it's a great approach. Deka Diktani. Look at the Mishnah. Read the Mishnah carefully. How's the Mishnah read? We're going all the way back to the Mishnah Dav Beis. Chamesh Yisrael Pocho Sarat Seim. 15 women will exempt their tzara, will exempt their co-wife. Interesting. What about the Erva herself? That's an assumption. And the Gemara points it out. V'ilu pituros upotros lo ketani. Right? The 15 women themselves, the Mishnah didn't even bother telling us that they're exempt. Because it's so self-evident. It's obvious. And according to Rava, of course, because they're an Erva. So Shema Mina, good. The Gemara says, I really like that approach. So now the Gemara winds up for a pretty straight fastball. And that is, I don't understand. The Erva herself, why is it that the Yibam can't marry the Erva? Oh, right. Because it's an it's a law of Sheish Bokaris. Saranami loti bayikra. All right, you know what? Same thing is true regarding the co-wife. Mishum de'in esedoch lo sase Sheish Bokaris. I mean, the co-wife as well. If there's no mitzvah of Yibam, even if there is a mitzvah of Yibam, she is it's a lav sheish bokari. She's an erva. Eshazach. So amalei rav acha bar bibel mar l'ravina achi kamer. Mishmei d'rava. Sorry, not melo itzrech kra. So the Gemara says, okay, you know what? That point is excellent. In fact, it's such a good point, I'm going to go with it. I don't need a drasha for the erva herself. That's a lav sheish bokaris. And a mitzvah says they can't trump that. I don't need a pasuk for the tzara. That's also a law sheish bakaris. I don't need drasha for that. It's the kra lemishrei tzara shalom b'makom mitzvah. You know what? I need a drasha for tzara shalom b'makom mitzvah. A koef of an erva in a non yibum context. My time I'm a kra ala b'makom alahu da asra shalom b'makom ala hasharya. Good, says the Gemara. That's what the Alaha is telling us all the way back on Daf Gimel and Beis. That in the context of Yibum, the Erva Zasser, the co-wife of the Erva Zasser, outside of the context of Yibum, meaning just a guy, a regular guy, not related to you, is married to your relative and another wife, the other wife is not prohibited to you, and the Alaha is coming to teach me that point. Okay, we will pause over here. Okay, we're starting tomorrow from Amalei Rami Bar Chama. We're in the middle of a discussion, I'm aware, but time's up. We'll stop over here, and tomorrow we'll pick it up. Again, let's just, quick summary. Big concepts today in today's daf. Concept of Kevin de Hutra Hutra, the application of that to the mitzvah of Yibum, a very limited application to the mitzvah of Yibum. If however, it's applicable, then I understand why we have the drush of Allah to tell me that despite the principle of Kevin de Hutra Hutra, Yibum is not going to override the Erva. Then another approach of the Gemara, and that is of Hekesh, in terms of why I need the special drush of Allah. Gemara did not seem to like that. And then the Gemara made a turn today in thinking, and that is Rava. Rava, despite the fact that the Gemara for the last 7 days said that a mitzvah sase is going to doch bidocha, a lo sase, and even a lo sase sheish bokaris, Rava introduces us to his thinking, which is that's not true. He doesn't agree. He says that a mitzvah sase will not override a lo sheish bokaris, and therefore, we really don't need a drasha. And basically, according to Rava, the Gemara says we don't need a drasha, not for the erva, not for the tzaras erva, and the drasha is only needed for tzaras erva shalom b'makom mitzvah.